Okay, well, welcome everybody. Today, Craig and I are joined by Congressman, ex-Congressman Jeb Hensarling, who is now a managing director and executive vice chairman at UBS. Jeb had served in Congress from Texas 5th Congressional District from 2003 to 2019, and during that time has had three terms as the chairman of the very powerful Committee on Financial Services. During his tenure, Jeb had the opportunity to participate in multiple debt ceiling discussions. And the topic today, which is very relevant, is the debt ceiling discussions that are going to be taking place on Capitol Hill now. What is the debt ceiling? What are the implications, and how he thinks this might play out? So with that, Jeb, I'm just going to ask you the first very basic question, and that is, what is the debt ceiling, and how is this mechanism within the federal government? How is this mechanism and why is it so important?
Well, first, Mark, thank you very much for having me here today. So since the dawn of our republic, since the founding of the United States of America, we have always had some debt, with the exception of the Andrew Jackson administration. So that gives you some perspective on how long we've had debt. Now, for a lot of our history, anytime debt was floated by the Treasury, there had to be an individual vote of the United States Congress. At some point, that got somewhat cumbersome. So beginning in 1917, it was codified into law that instead Congress would vote on an overall ceiling of the debt, and should debt reach that ceiling, then Congress would debate whether and how to extend it. Now, there's been a few changes in the statute since 1917, but for over 100 years, there have been these types of votes. Now, the debt ceiling also tends to come at the end of the budgeting process. So Congress will pass a budget, then they will appropriate funds for certain programs. And then if the totality of that ends up hitting the debt ceiling at the end of the process, Congress has to come in and re-vote on the debt ceiling.
So, Jeb, again, thank you for taking the time and speaking with us on this subject that I know is on many of our clients' minds. Let's start with looking at both sides of this debate. And maybe based on your experience actually being a part of these negotiations, what is the incentive? What are the motivations on the Democrat side? And how do you see them sort of playing through on their incentives?
Well, Craig, if you don't mind, let me offer a little bit more historic context. And that is that I'd say going back all the way to the Reagan era, there are some debt ceiling votes that become very, very contentious. Others enjoy kind of bipartisan support. And I would also say that during the time that Congress is provided, there is a so-called proud tradition of the party in Congress voting against increasing the debt ceiling when asked by a president of the other party. So number one, it's not unprecedented for Democrats to vote against a debt ceiling requested by a Republican president, and vice versa. So I'd offer that historic context. I would also offer the historic context that negotiations are not unprecedented. If you look at various legislation that has been offered that either has the appearance or reality of kind of bending the deficit curve, a number of them have been attached to a debt ceiling vote. You can go back to the old Graham-Rudman law in the 80s that first instituted sequesters. You can go back to the Budget Control Act. And a number of different measures. So number one, this is not historically unprecedented. So moving forward to the question you ask of today. So President Biden has said he wants what we call a clean debt ceiling vote. And he points to the fact that under President Trump, Democrats joined with Republicans to increase the debt ceiling without any type of controversy or without any legislation being attached to it. The Democrats also point to the potential economic calamity, if you will, of having there to be default on sovereign debt. Meanwhile, Republicans, with Speaker McCarthy in the House, saying Republicans will not pass a clean debt ceiling bill and there must be negotiations. And he points to the rapid increase in the national debt over a period of years, including the spending that has come out of COVID. So the Republican position is most of this spending happened during your watch and we want to negotiate. Now, Democrats have said, okay, show us your budget, show us your plan. Well, so far, Republicans don't have one. It's easier for an administration of one to be able to come up with a position versus, say, a fractious caucus of over 200 to come up with one position. Last week, Speaker McCarthy met with the president. They had discussions. I wouldn't say there was progress, but apparently there were discussions that Speaker McCarthy characterized as constructive. And then the president last night in the State of the Union once again articulated the position of the White House and the Democratic Senate.
So thinking about, you know, how this negotiation plays out and, you know, what the most likely outcome might be. And I know it's difficult to, you know, predict the future. But what do you think potentially, as you look at both sides and you look at the pluses and minuses of, you know, holding up the debt ceiling legislation, and maybe putting the United States government in a position where it can't meet its obligations. What do you think the most likely outcome is of these negotiations?
Well, we all know, particularly in our world, that past results are no indication of future performance. But having said that, again, a little bit of historic context. There have been well over 100 different votes to increase the debt ceiling. So far, not one of them have ever led to default on sovereign debt. So again, a little bit more historic context. So you asked me about likely outcomes. So number one, again, the Republicans have no unified position today. Now, they don't have to have one today. The so-called X date, which is the date that, as a practical matter, we hit the debt ceiling. Legally, we have already hit the debt ceiling, but there's something called extraordinary measures that the Treasury is using now. I know I'm getting into the weeds, but as a practical matter, Republicans probably have till late spring, early summer to come up with a unified position. Let's assume for the moment they don't come up with a unified position. If they don't, I think it's very, very likely that you will see a clean debt ceiling with nothing attached to it passed by the Congress. So although the Speaker of the House controls what legislation comes to the floor of the House of Representatives for a vote, that can be overcome by something we called a discharge petition, signed by a mere majority of the House of Representatives. I would anticipate at some point then that all Democrats would combine with a handful of Republicans to sign a discharge petition, force a vote on a clean debt ceiling, and that would pass. Now, in the alternative, let's say Republicans come up with a unified position. They have already taken off the table probably the two most contentious issues, Medicare and Social Security. So they could coalesce around a number of kind of what we call budget process reforms or commissions that would fast track certain budget reforms, spending cuts. That's something very well that Democrats could agree to, and it might be something that has some popularity. In addition, there's talk among Republicans of rescinding stimulus money from COVID that has yet to be allocated. So that's, I think, roughly $400 billion, maybe $500 billion dollars of roughly $6 trillion that has been authorized by Congress. But again, that hasn't gone through the pipeline. Possibility that could be negotiated as well. And then if I could bring up one other point, I think when you mentioned default, that still remains a very, very remote possibility in that during the last big dust up over the debt ceiling dating back to 2013, I believe it was revealed that Treasury, although they were a little less forthcoming about it, was prepared to prioritize the payment of principal and interest on sovereign debt over and above other payments. So it didn't come to that point. That's not exactly crossing the Rubicon, but it's certainly wading into the Rubicon.
So with that as context and background, what, Jeb, do you think is the most likely scenario? If you can predict how this plays out over the next several months, what do you see happening?
Well, on the one hand, I could easily see, I'm going to sound like an economist on the one hand and then on the other hand, but on the one hand, there were 20 members of the House Republican Conference that held up Speaker McCarthy's election for 15 votes. They very well could be emboldened by the leverage they exercise. And if so, I would say there's a likelihood they will overplay their hand in kind of what I call the court of public opinion. If they do, then a high likelihood you'll end up with a clean debt ceiling vote with all Democrats and a handful of Republicans. I would say if Republicans can coalesce around some budget process reforms, because the American people, it still polls pretty high that they want something to be done with the deficit. So it could be they come up with something that Democrats can begrudgingly agree to. So I think it's going to be one or the other. But let me repeat, I would say based on history, based on the negotiations, based on what we know Treasury was prepared to do about a decade ago, it remains an incredibly low probability that you would see default on sovereign debt. I'm not going to say impossible. I'm not going to say the probability is zero, but very remote.
If we go to the 11th hour, you know, as a negotiating tactic on both sides, the Democrats continuing to say, as the president said last night in the State of the Union, we're just not going to negotiate. And the Republicans, if they can stay unified, pushing this to the 11th hour, I think it's your position that it's very unlikely that you would get past the 11th hour, that they would find some resolution. Either the Republicans cave because they recognize the political fallout from going too far would be more of a negative than winning the argument would be a positive. How far do you think the 11th hour is, and what do you suspect the economic, financial market damage may be?
Well, I do believe that for negotiating purposes, both sides are going to wait to the 11th hour. And at that point, I think you're going to see a lot of smoke. You're going to have fire. You're going to have noise. And I think you will easily see a lot of market volatility, because this vote is far more consequential than the annual appropriations vote that potentially could end in a temporary partial government shutdown. Markets have grown somewhat accustomed to those. The debt ceiling is a very, very different matter. And the last time you had drama surrounding this, Craig, you may recall there was a downgrade of U.S. sovereign debt by at least one rating agency. So if this goes into the 11th hour or the 11th hour plus 30, I could see that happening likewise. Now, I mentioned that Treasury during the last battle was prepared to prioritize sovereign debt payments. So I would say, you know, technically, I see very low probability again that you would see default. But It could be that markets react similarly if a cotton farmer in West Texas is denied a crop payment, if a veteran in Ames, Iowa is denied a veteran's payment. So we would be in uncharted territory there, exactly how the markets would react to, again, no default on sovereign debt, but arguably default on other obligations. I would say Republicans in the House have a challenge because they will be up against the White House, the Senate, Wall Street, Fortune 500 companies. Ultimately, I think most players within financial services, most economists would agree that if there was to be default on sovereign debt, that would be somewhere between economically serious and economically catastrophic.
So just circling back in terms of timing, you were mentioning June, maybe July, is that sort of 11th hour. Would you agree that, you know, based on where we are today and what the numbers show, that that 11th hour is probably in that time frame?
Maybe a little earlier. I would say my experience in Congress indicates to me that the Secretary of Treasury has a little bit of leeway when to manage that debt. Again, I don't want to get in the weeds, but she is currently involved in quote unquote extraordinary measures, which has to do temporarily not filling certain federal retirement programs, something we call intergovernmental debt. Let me set that aside. To answer your question, I think it could be as early as late spring. It might be as late as, early summer. I doubt right now, based on the information I have, that it could go much beyond mid to late June, and it could be as early as late April to May.
So just honing in, lastly on when you think, if this is not resolved, when you think we might start seeing a lot more coverage, a lot more news coverage and potential volatility. Is that really late spring where you start seeing, you know, as the Republicans and Democrats sort of battle this out, that we could see that increased volatility that you're talking about?
Well, I think three things could cause a lot of volatility. Again, the perception or reality that each side is drawing very hard lines in the sand. And then also, if Secretary Yellen starts to raise alarm bells that the so-called X date is, 2 weeks away, 1 week away, 72 hours away. So I think it's going to have to do with, is either side drawing hard lines in the sand, and does the Secretary of Treasury start predicting letting us know that the X date approaches and starts to talk about kind of the economic Armageddon, if you will, that could result from not doing that. At those two points, I think you could begin to see a fair amount of market volatility and angst.
There's been some debate. There are likely a handful of moderate Republicans that would choose to side with the Democrats to create the majority required to pass the debt ceiling. But there's some debate about whether Speaker McCarthy has the ability to simply not bring the vote to the floor. I know there's some argument based on, I believe, the 14th Amendment that he's actually required to bring the vote to the floor. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is there an obligation or a requirement on the that requires the speaker to actually bring a vote, or can he just simply not bring a vote?
Well, number one, I'm unaware of any court decision by the Supreme Court or any appellate court that would compel this vote to go to the House floor under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. I mean, the argument with respect to the 14th Amendment usually has to do with, and it's a question that hasn't been litigated about, and I don't have the language right in front of me, that our debt shall never be questioned. So that is separate and apart from bringing a vote to the House floor. House rules say that if a discharge petition of over 218, and you literally go to the House well and you sign your name to it, that the speaker is compelled to bring that vote to the floor. Now, there's some other procedural rules. He doesn't have to necessarily bring it up immediately, but he is going to have to bring that vote to the House floor.
And if he brings the House, if he brings the vote to the House floor, even with some delay, isn't it likely that he would have enough Republicans, even if this vote were brought, you know, well before the 11th hour, that that enough Republicans would vote to raise the debt ceiling?
Well, that is my belief. Again, because you'll start seeing all kinds of market volatility. You'll see all kinds of pushback. And again, to some extent, it depends. Can Republicans have a unified position? And do moderates believe that it is a position that they believe is both wise and defensible? It could be the position is something that they believe is onerous. It could be underlying policies they do not agree with. And given that the 20 who held up the speaker's election arguably leveraged the Democratic caucus, they're going to have a hard time turning around and saying, well, moderates, you've somehow committed an act of treason against the Republican Party by doing the same. So far, moderates are saying they don't have an intention to sign a discharge petition, but I've heard that kind of language before in my congressional career. And, you know, when it really gets hot and heated, I could easily see a number of Republicans joining with Democrats. Again, contingency number one, no unified position. Contingency number two, a position that appears to be too onerous for more moderate Republicans.
So I'll just ask one last question with regard to Speaker McCarthy. Do you think it is strategically sort of in his best interest to talk through these issues of, okay, we want to get some spending cuts, we want to negotiate, but at the end of the day, if they create a problem and if they cause market volatility and turmoil, you know, aren't they sort of handing the Democrats the, okay, look, we have the economy going really strong, everything's great, and now look what the Republicans did. They blew everything. So they sort of give a free pass. So at the end of the day, isn't it really in the Republicans' best interest, you know, to now be a little blustery and say, here, we want the spending cuts, but to ultimately, you know, if they have to bend and give in on a clean debt ceiling vote?
Well, believe it or not, members of Congress often actually believe in what they say, and they have certain policies based on principle. So, one, I would offer that. Second of all, again, I go back to what unified position might they hold? I mean, you already have, for example, a Senator Manchin of West Virginia who has called for some type of negotiations. You have bipartisan legislation, for example, that would create a bipartisan commission to deal with future entitlement spending, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, federal retirement, which, again, I would categorize as a process reform. Well, Democrats who have co-sponsored that legislation in the Senate, I think the Republican lead co-sponsor is Senator Romney out of Utah. They're going to have a hard time saying, oh, even though I co-sponsored the legislation, I no longer support it when it's attached to a debt ceiling vote. So again, I would go back. It depends on what position is held. And if the American people view this as reasonable and the polling shows that, then it puts more pressure on the Democrats than the Republicans. So I would say a lot of it has to do with overreach in public opinion. I mean, there's an old quote from Mark Twain. In America, public opinion is everything. Some even believe it to be the voice of God. So perhaps not the voice of God, but I'm sure you elected officials are going to pay very close attention to public opinion here.
Jeb, very helpful, very timely. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk this through with us and, you know, share this insight both with us and with the folks we share this this podcast with.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.